This is BDO in the Boardroom, a podcast by the BDO Center for Corporate Governance for the Board of Directors and those charged with governance. We're joined by your board peers and inspiring leaders to discuss the trending and timeless issues that are impacting today's boardroom agendas. Let's get started.
Thank you for joining today. I'm Amy Rojic, leader of BDO's Center for Corporate Governance, and I have Scott Sherman, a partner and co-chair of the Securities and Corporate Governance Litigation Practices Group at Nelson Mullins, here to dissect essential insights on shareholder demands and derivative lawsuits that every director should be aware of to set themselves up to inform on an offensive strategy, but also to play good defense if such lawsuits should materialize. So first, a little bit about my guest. Scott practices in a complex business litigation and securities litigation and serves as co-chair of his firm's Securities and Corporate Governance Litigation Group. He's ranked by chambers in securities litigation and represents public and private companies, directors, and officers in securities class actions and derivative lawsuits, and represents special litigation committees while advising companies and boards on how to avoid legal actions. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Amy, for having me today.
Yeah, and Scott and I have worked together over the past several months on various things, and I think Scott will have a lot to share with our board audience today. So glad he could join us. And I'm going to jump right in, Scott, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
I guess maybe starting with the end in mind, but want to set the table for our folks here today that hopefully have not had to be defendants in a legal action from shareholders. But let's start with what is a derivative action and maybe how it's different from a securities class action.
First, thank you so much for having me today. Pleasure to speak with your audience. So the gist is, and I think it's always good for board members to have an understanding high level, is a derivative action literally means where a stockholder, shareholder seeks to bring a claim on behalf of the company, meaning standing in the shoes of the company for some alleged violation by the officers or directors, as opposed to a class action where the stockholders have been individually harmed, allegedly, and are bringing an action against the company for damages. So derivative actions are really designed to give money or other types of consideration back to the company that the stockholder believes the company has been harmed by its own officers and directors.
So I guess maybe when we're thinking about that, you know, are there certain things to be on the lookout for even, and maybe we talk a little bit about demands, right? So, you know, even before receiving a demand or a complaint from a shareholder, and does the board and the company maybe have a process in place to address such matters before they arise?
Sure. And I think it's to give context to how these things arise. So picture the idea of a planned public company M&A transaction, or there's going to be disappointing news that comes from a stock drop for whatever reason. And sometimes it comes from nothing at all, just literally a shareholder is sending letters in. And so in circumstances, what you're seeing is boards are getting requests, usually to the company initially, for information, documents, books and records. And really, it could also be for alleged violations where they're asking the board to investigate certain actions. And so it really just depends, candidly, and we can talk about in a few minutes, but really like what state law applies and what lawyers look at and how they even send these demands in. So really understanding coming in is what is the process that plays out when you get a demand and how the company needs to deal with it so that the board can really understand what their role is.
Right. And you just mentioned states. So maybe you can give some examples of how one state process might differ from others when it comes to derivative actions, and then we can get into more of what the board's role is in all of this.
Sure. So this is a very timely topic because as you read anything on the public company or even private company side, different organizations are looking at either being in Delaware, where every large company, at least most large companies, have been for the last many, many, many decades, to the fact of looking at other states like Texas or Nevada, you know, but many states have various companies that incorporate. And so in Delaware, for example, They have a different kind of rule of law as far as how a stockholder needs to bring a demand or can file an action. If the, just to give a concept, if a stockholder who is suing a Delaware company believes that it would be futile to go to the board because they think the board is not independent or they're going to not make a good decision, they can attempt to file a lawsuit right away and never go to the board at all until after, actually after the lawsuit is filed. If you're looking at states such as Georgia, where I live, it's called demand required state, meaning that the board actually has to get the demand before a lawsuit can be filed. And the board gets to kind of review those. And there's a lot of other different areas of governance that play into the different states you're in. So understanding just even on a tutorial level, we explain to boards, well, here's what your states allow for, and here's how it works, so that if you get a demand, you're not going to be kind of understanding for the first time how this plays out.
Now, that makes a lot of sense. So, okay, so we understand that there's differences, and boards should probably need to understand that as part of their understanding of where their company's incorporated and all of that. So then let's say a demand comes in. So we're in the scenario where the shareholder actually, you know, notifies, right, ahead of time. So let's say, what are some of the key points that boards need to know right off the bat in terms of that?
I think there's a couple of things. First of all, it's understanding at least high level process. Process is key. And what I mean by process is when a demand comes in, depending what it is, the company is going to get advice starting with its general counsel and its current corporate outside legal counsel. And so in working with that company counsel, you're going to make a decision along with advice from the lawyers on whether or not, for example, that current counsel needs to seek independent counsel to review a particular situation. For example, if it's specific to an issue that the company counsel regularly advises the board on, you know, it, when you're investigating an issue or looking into it, many times it's helpful, and some state laws look to see if the counsel themselves are independent in making decisions. Also, you look at the board. You say, okay, depending on what state law applies, is the board itself in the position to make a decision and move forward? Or should there be a subset of the board that plays out? For example, in Georgia, you're allowed to have board members who are named in actions to still be deemed independent for purposes of conducting an investigation. Different states have different laws on that. So the key issue, I say, on the front end is working with your legal counsel to understand who is the right people to be making this decision on the board as far as how to proceed, and separately, what legal counsel is the right legal counsel to help. And so it can be pretty kind of, it's axiomatic really to understand that. And then once you've gotten into kind of who's making the decision, you know, it's really all about process and taking it seriously. Because for example, there's sometimes requests are simply for books and records. There's no litigation threatened. There's no investigation requirement. It's simply give us books and records. But when I say take that seriously, sometimes, you know, I've seen companies that, you know, try to respond on their own or otherwise, you know, go and produce the kitchen sink because they want to kind of get past this, or, you know, take steps to do the opposite, produce very little. I think in looking at the issues, if I'm counsel advising that company, I want to look at it as to almost thinking it backwards. What's the worst case of where this could go? And let's think how to proactively avoid potential pitfalls that we're going to have to deal with. So thinking seriously about how to respond, how to limit and otherwise respond fairly to the request is important. If it comes to investigations, you know, thinking about, okay, once you've decided what legal counsel can provide the advice and which board members or otherwise can should be part of the decision making, you know, I always say it's all about the process. No matter what state law you're in, you have to have a fair and reasonable process so that you can actually show to whether it's the court or the shareholder exactly, you know, this is how we undertook this investigation. We took it seriously, and then we responded appropriately, because no matter what happens at the end, if you have a solid process, even if there's bumps in the road, you're gonna be able to put yourself in the best position to understand the outcome, you know, which is really, when it comes to it, what's in the best interest of the company. And when I say that, it means when you have a derivative action, it's like, what is in the best interest of the company is the ultimate legal determination. And so the courts are looking that to decide that. So if you're a board member and you're trying to understand what exactly your goal is, it's to be able to do your best to ensure that that process is fair and reasonable. And so that the company is making a decision that's in the its best interest to drive a outcome that is allowing the company to move forward.
Gotcha. Okay. So one quick question, just so that I understand. So what happens if I'm a board member of X company and I get a letter from a shareholder directly sent to me? What would I do in that situation?
Okay. So if you're a board member and you're getting, or for example, the chairman of the board gets them, because they will be directed many times.
Yeah, not
to
that
the chairman.
I have, but clear.
We're speaking hypothetical.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, if you're getting the letter and look, and this can play out in the private company space as well. So a lot of like smaller kind of closely held companies get these, and, you know, it's not too many people on the board, and the board has the CEO. And so there's a lot of mix and match. So when you get those, first of all, recognize this is not about you personally, and that you shouldn't take this as your charge. As a first and foremost, you've got to get it to your general counsel, or if you don't have a general counsel, if it's a smaller company, your outside counsel, so that they can assess. And I see this, as I said, a lot of times in smaller companies, well, they'll get requests for information and they'll try to deal with it on their own. And everyone's very smart in what they do. I do not run boards. I do not run public companies. But I also don't expect my public company boards to run the litigation. They need to go to their counsel. So once they've done that and they take that step away from it, it then allows them to have their counsel guide them. And then I'll say another part of it is, I always leave these investigations and this work with board members saying, you know, I really wish I had understood how much work and where this plays out. Not because I wouldn't have done it, but it's just important because I've got to make decisions. So at the end of the day, it is the board making a decision, or a subset or a special committee making a decision. And so I think getting some guidance on the front end, so you're not like, oh my God, what am I about to deal with? This kind of tutorial we do for boards is helpful. So you're just not kind of in this, let's say, shock perspective, but you can methodically kind of understand the process going in, so you can better get yourself situated mentally and kind of conceptually in how you're going to have to play this role with your counsel.
Well, and this fits into, I think, a broader discussion that we have with our clients all the time about, you know, crisis management. It may not rise to the level of a crisis, but when you're thinking about how you're planning playbooks and things, taking a holistic approach by the company of thinking about all the potential risks that are in the pipeline. And just as you said, having that process kind of thought out in advance makes something like this much easier to get started and avoid pitfalls. So avoiding pitfalls, let's go a little bit deeper into that. You mentioned special committees and some other things. Can you elaborate on some of the areas where, you know, you see the potential for companies to get in trouble if they don't do certain things?
So, for example, and look, again, this all dependent on the state and the law that plays in. So this is not holistic. But so first of all, there's two generally in this world types of committees. And we're talking about investigations where there's been a demand to conduct an investigation. Or, for example, there's been a lawsuit, a derivative action filed where all the officers and directors have been named. So the two types of committees, one's called a special litigation committee, which is really a committee that takes, in a sense, control of the decision. An analysis has been done as to like independence and who can be the appropriate people or who should be the people on the board making the decisions. And so therefore, it's been determined that this committee should be making the decision. So this committee will then end up having a resolution forming it that will, in a sense, act as the board. And they're going to make the decision on the lawsuit, on the litigation, you know, whether it should proceed or not, and how the investigation should be conducted. Another kind of version of this is what's called a demand review committee. which is, again, depending on the state law and the rest and the allegations, where it's determined that a committee is not actually taking full control over the decision, but ultimately they are providing a recommendation to either the full board or a subset of the board. That board is then making the decision on how to proceed. And so in both scenarios, normally you will have company counsel that represents the company and continues to do so. And then these committees will have independent counsel. And so I've been on both sides where we're either company counsel, we're trying to work and provide information to the committee and their counsel, and I've represented the committees. But really kind of stepping into understanding that role and what those committees mean, I think are very important so that you can then kind of move forward. And I've written an article a number of years ago with a board member of a public company that walked through the process of this is what happens and this is how this plays out. And then, by the way, and we can talk about some other items, but one of the key things is, okay, so from a risk management perspective, what are our disclosure obligations? How does insurance play into this? You know, what do we need to tell our accountants depending on what the situation is? So when it comes to those issues, that is kind of done, you know, from a company perspective, you know, and they're still looking at that as board members. You need to understand that, you know, while the committee is therefore conducting its work. But this all plays out together in tandem, you know, these decisions so that you're disclosing things appropriately to the investing community while at the same time getting ready and gearing up and setting up a process to conduct an investigation.
Got it. And I guess just from your perspective, and I assume I know what the answer is going to be, but is there a time frame for these, or does it really depend on the underlying, you know, allegation or claim by the shareholder?
It depends on the case, but I will tell you that one of the key things that plays out and touch on is keeping control of the process. So what I mean by that, ultimately, if a stockholder has counsel, they are going to want to, you know, control that situation. They're going to want to either say, hey, we don't think the company can do this right. We need to control it. You have stockholder, you know, shareholder counsel that is actually leading the charge, and the company wants to keep control, right? So one of the key things that comes into timing is when we get involved where we're not company counsel, but there's either a derivative action been filed or there's a demand required state like Georgia or other states where there has to be a demand where you have 90 days to respond before they can file an action. One of the key things we look at is staying and kind of pausing any type of litigation so that we can conduct the investigation if I'm representing the committee. And so from a timing perspective, you know, getting this figured out on the front end on who counsel should be and whether it should be a committee and what type of committee is crucial. Because many times you're going to have stockholder counsel that's going to jump in and, you know, start their litigation and move forward with depositions and the rest. And so one of the first things we always deal with is trying to set process up so that we can take steps to do the investigation without a lawsuit happening in the middle of it. And when I said, for example, 90 days, many times you can do things within 3 months. I will tell you, as a matter of course, it can take a lot longer than that. And so the key is, let's say it takes, I think it will take 5 months or 6 months. But once I get into it, I see that there's 2 terabytes of data and it could take 6 months just to get through the data. The key is always about communication. So whether it's to the stockholder counsel or it's to the court, if you have one, making sure that people understand your process so you can continue to have a stay of the matter if there's litigation. And work through things. And look, it can take a year, it can take 2 years. These things can take time to get through. And sometimes you draft a big report to the court. And then let's assume that you believe that the case should be dismissed. You have to go through that process with the court. Or you think that as a committee, somebody in the officer suite did something wrong. You have to investigate and determine how to proceed with that, you know, and maybe settle those matters or proceed with litigation. So there's a whole host of issues that can take a year or 2 years. But what I try to do is keep things eyes wide open to board members and the company and the court so that they understand as we go through this, where we are in timing, where we think this is going, and ultimately trying to think backwards what is the resolution we think we're going to get? But ultimately, until we make that final determination with the committee on what the resolution is, always understanding what the options are so that we can be sure everyone is informed that we are conducting a proper process, but also looking at timing, because it can take a while to get through it. And there's various things that can happen to change timing as you get into these investigations.
Do any of these matters, is there a point where a shareholder, you know, are negotiations with shareholders ever kind of brought into this? If you understand my question, like, is there a point where the shareholder says, you know what, I'm costing the company too much money by pursuing this, or, you know, I'm really not, maybe they have a change of heart and are thinking, but you know what, maybe this isn't the best approach. What happens in those situations?
Well, I think you have to look at kind of how these cases come. I mean, so sometimes you have institutional investors that, you know, view this as kind of a mainstay, sort of an activism approach to what can you come out of a derivative law. So you can have money. Many times you can have corporate reforms, you know, and changes. You can have board member changes and those types of things. And so I think you have to look at the context of who's filing the lawsuit. Sometimes they can be arguably lawyer driven, but really the way I view it is if somebody is bringing this action, in a sense, bring them into the fold of, I want to hear from them. And I want to, you know, so early on, I believe it's important that they, you know, not treating these stockholders, I use them interchangeably. Some use stockholders, some use shareholders. So I'm just using both. You know, I believe bringing them up front and having the conversation with them is not viewing them as the enemy up front is important, because they're the ones that brought this action. And ultimately, if it's a court I'm going to have to go to, I'm going to have to say that I looked at all the relevant information. I helped the committee make a decision. And ultimately, the only way to do that is making sure if they have something useful to provide, you've asked them. And so I think in the conversation, that's where it starts. Ultimately, if the process is run the way I run them with my committees, you're going to end up having a decision about what to do with the investigation and what the allegations are. And sometimes you're going to have situations I've had where we believe that something should move forward, meaning that something that they brought should move forward, and some of it should not. So in that situation, you're negotiating kind of in a trifold fashion where you're working with the company and maybe an officer has their own counsel, if they're the kind of person that maybe is in the crosshairs. And then you're also working with the stockholder counsel to assess these issues. And so that's where the negotiation work through comes in, really negotiating the front end to pause what they're doing so we can investigate and then ultimately make decisions after we've completed our investigation. In other situations, we'll say, look, we don't believe it's in the best interest of the company to pursue any of these things. And then you're still negotiating with them to determine, you know, how is this going to proceed? Because then likely the result is in working with the company to file a motion to dismiss those claims. And so there may be some negotiation, but ultimately it may be going to the court. So it's negotiating on the front end to get information and to let us do our work. And then once a decision has been made on the investigation, the back end of, okay, now we have our results. How are we going to resolve this? Or are we going to have to go to court to figure this out?
Got it. No, thank you for that. And I guess my last question before we wrap up today would be, in today's environment, with all of the uncertainty that board members and companies have to be dealing with in terms of times, there's never certainty, right? But it feels like right now we're in a state of there's stuff coming at companies from every direction and all time sensitive types of things. Have you seen an uptick in these types of litigation or demand proceedings?
You know, I'd say that over the last 25 years of my practice, it's definitely changed. I think, you know, the current environment, if you talk to the carriers we work with, you know, that understand and see these litigations and get reports on this to the companies, I think that people thought 2025 was going to be a huge uptick. I don't think it played out that way. They're now saying 2026 may be that. I think there's one part of it is with current administration and kind of what you've seen in probably the press of more limited securities regulatory actions at the federal level, some of the kind of derivative or stockholder claims that may have been sparked by investigations just aren't on the same level because you're not having regulatory investigations or inquiries on the same level. But as a whole, I will say derivative matters, I'd say when I first started, were almost kind of tail wagging dog. You just didn't see as much active derivative case. They were kind of brought in connection with an already filed securities class action. These days, you see much more attuned and activism with what we call Delaware, Section 220 books and records requests that may lend to ultimately litigation or a derivative claim. And you see more independent derivative actions that are not even class actions. So I'd say this concept of, in a sense, protecting the company according to the stockholder through these demands has certainly been on the rise as independent and more forceful actions over the last number of years. And I think candidly, that's what sparked to some degree with some of these resolutions and lawsuits that have had in Delaware. You're seeing companies that are looking at other states to say, okay, is there a better place for me to be that may give me a better opportunity and more protections from these actions and these big awards or these big kind of settlements? And so the answer is, it's kind of a mix and match of how many actions, but the type of actions, the amount of money that's being alleged has certainly increased over the years, which is playing into kind of this race now of, reincorporation or assessment. I think it will continue to do so over the next coming years.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Scott, for all of your insights here, and I appreciate you appearing on our show today.
Thank you for listening to BDO in the Boardroom. If you like the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions about what we discussed today, reach out to us via BDO.com, where you can also access the resources cited in this episode and learn more about the BDO Center for Corporate Governance. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO.